Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. I'm so excited for today's show. We had Charles Gwynn on, and he was talking about reverse mortgages, and I thought he did such an incredible show when he was talking about if you own a home and you have money in your home, how that actually becomes a savings account for your life, for your retirement, for your future. And as I was thinking about it, I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful to bring somebody on to really talk about home buying and the real estate market. And so I'm so thrilled for today's guest. Today we have John Igler with us, and John is from Tellus Properties, which is a residential brokerage firm, and he is best known for championing architecture and estates with superior design. I love that that's his niche. He has a lifelong passion for architecture, and he thoroughly enjoys working with clients who share his appreciation for good design, as well as those who are interested in learning really more about the subject. He just gives such depth and breadth to the great architecture. And here in Los Angeles, he loves working because the real estate here, we have just some of the most beautiful, extraordinary buildings, from modernist masterpieces to really great 1920 Spanish homes. There's really something that suits everybody's taste, and so he loves being able to see somebody's vision and help them make their dream come true. John understands that superior client service and deep market knowledge and really marketing savvy. But it's really not being savvy, it's being it's being the pinnacle of really knowing and understanding somebody's dreams. That's what makes somebody savvy. That's really what makes somebody be able to move from one genre to the next, from one level of architecture from the next, from one level of somebody coming in and saying, how do I buy a house? How do I buy my dream? Or somebody that's really looking to invest for property. And all of those are essential to really positive customer experiences. And he has so much background. He's worked with sellers. He's able to leverage his years of experience working as top advertising agencies in New York and Los Angeles. He understands the power of marketing and really how to drive a sale. So from advertising to collateral materials to direct mail, every single marketing element he believes should communicate a consistent message about listing the property. And he really enjoys assisting both the buyers and the sellers in searching for their new homes or in selling their new homes. And first and foremost, it's really about understanding his clients' priorities and how they want to live on a day-to-day basis, and then finding a home that suits their lifestyle. And I love that, that the niche is so specific to somebody's visions and dreams and needs and wants and desires, and, of course, their financial capability. John has an MBA from the Leonard N. Stern School of Business in New York University, and he has an undergraduate degree from George Washington University. And he's a man after my own heart because he also serves on the board of the Los Angeles chapter of the Institute of Classical Architecture and Classical America. And that's a nonprofit, and we know how much I love nonprofits. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing the classical tradition in architecture, urbanism, and all of their allied arts. And the fact that he is so generous with his time, with his talent, with his wisdom, with his knowledge, and truly, he is just a genius in the home buying market and venue. And we are so honored and grateful that he has taken his time to be with us today. So, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nicole. I hope I can live up to the introduction, but thank you.
Oh, no. I mean, first of all, I love your background, that, you know, that you have such a desire and such a passion for the architecture of the home, because it's very different than somebody who is just in the business of buying and selling homes. You actually are connected and drawn to these properties. And so tell me a little bit about your background. I always ask people when they come on the show, when somebody is 6 or 7 or they're a little kid and they want to be an astronaut or a policeman or a fireman, how did you get into architecture and how did you get into home design and the desire to help people find their dream homes?
Sure. You know, it actually does stem back to my childhood. My dad was a general contractor, And I grew up, even 4 or 5 years old, he would take me to job sites, and I was always fascinated about construction, and particularly residential, which is what he specialized in. And so it really did stem from that. I had a desire to be an architect initially, which I then went a different route career-wise, went to business school and got into marketing and advertising, but made a full circle. And functionally, I'm still a marketer in that I do buy and sell homes with clients, but I, rather than just marketing a product for its own sake, I actually market a product that I truly, truly enjoy. And it really does stem back to my childhood. I mean, I've always loved architecture and design. So now I'm fortunate enough to market and sell a product that I really love. So I feel very, very fortunate in that sense.
Oh, that's incredible. That's great. And so this has been a really crazy couple of years between healthcare and administration and the finances of America. And for those of you that are listening from other countries, I know you are following our nation and seeing all of the ups and the downs, and so much has changed so quickly, and our market as far as home buying has changed so drastically over the past 10, 6, even 2 years. Is this a good time to buy a home?
You know, well, I'll have to couch that in terms of the local market. I mean, I can speak very directly to the Southern California market and also the New York markets, where I often work with clients as well. But it's a fantastic time to buy a home in the scheme of things, because interest rates truly are at remarkable lows. I mean, people are getting adjustable rates consistently in the 3s on 7 and 10 year ARMs, and they're getting fixed rates in the 4s and 5s on 30-year both jumbo and conforming loans. So it's an extraordinary time in terms of the cost of money. And I think as long as someone's time horizon for ownership is 5, 6 years or more, it's a fantastic time to buy.
And when you and I were talking just briefly before the show, you were saying it's also a really good time to sell.
It is. It's you know, it's one of those rare times where it's a great time to be a seller because supply remains remarkably low in prime markets. So there's very little supply, and as a result, sellers do have quite a bit of control over transactions, which just means that the buyers need to be very prepared, very buttoned up in terms of their finances and their expectations, because demand is so low. But at the same time, supply is low. And even though supply is low, rates are remarkably low. So it does make a lot of sense to be both a seller and a buyer. It's an odd time in that sense.
I love that. I mean, it's such an exciting time to think about that. And when you say you have to be buttoned up and prepared, it sounds like that's a song I should have, like Bob Hope or somebody. I feel like, okay, button up your overcoat and let's begin. But we had somebody on speaking about debt consolidation and clearing your debt and your credit scores. And Jamie Brown did an amazing show on even how to get an 800 credit score, how to be able to get, is the credit score important? What do you actually need to prepare to, I mean, it sounds like you need to go get your snow boots and your scarf and go out into, what does it look like to prepare to be a home buyer?
It is a bit of a blizzard out there. And again, it largely stems back to the supply and demand being still somewhat out of balance. There's significantly more demand from home buyers than there is supply out there. So as a result, buyers have to compete with multiple other buyers, often on the same property. At least in the Los Angeles and New York markets, it's extremely common to have 3, 4, 5 offers simultaneously on a property. And the buyer who has, as I mentioned earlier, has sort of all their ducks in a row and is all buttoned up, is the one who's going to look the most attractive to a seller. And what that means is you've taken the months prior to even getting into the market to make sure your finances are in order, to check your credit score and see what it's at. And yes, you definitely need credit scores in the 700s to compete in today's market. It's also a time to consolidate your down payment amounts, because credit score combined with the down payment amount, ideally 20 or 25%, combined with your just overall level of organization is really what's going to enable you as a buyer to compete in today's competitive market. Because when a seller has 3 or 4 or 5 people to choose from, the standouts are the ones who are truly, truly organized and appear incredibly confident and ready to act. And you can only have that confidence if you've done your homework and gotten all prepared.
That's incredible when you think about it. And I know that we have another show, Hourglass Bride, and we were talking on the bridal show about first-time home buying, and especially for people that are just getting married. And when somebody is a couple, or, you know, it's a dual relationship coming in, do both credit scores have to be in the 700s? Is it better to have, to do that? Or is it better if one person has excellent credit and another person's credit is awful?
It all needs to be buttoned up. It's as long as each party that is going to be on the mortgage is going to have the credit score that is required. I mean, it's across the board. So especially, I think, when someone's recently gotten married, they may or may not know the credit standing of their spouse. So I think it's really important to look into both before even dipping their toes into the mortgage market, and then just know where they stand, because if they're going to be on the mortgage, they absolutely need to have the credit score to back it up.
And then when you said it's a competition, so if somebody says the house is whatever it is, it's $1.9 million or it's whatever, I mean, let's just make it up, and somebody says okay and they're willing to pay that, somebody else can be willing to pay that too, and they're going to have to fight it out? It's going to be the best credit score at that point, or it's...
Well, it really does come down to it, not necessarily credit score, it's the overall terms. Because generally, before a buyer gets into the market, they're going to speak to a mortgage banker or broker, and that banker is going to look at their credit score, look at their income, and look at their down payment amounts, and they're going to verify all of that. And then in terms of the offer, they're simply going to issue a pre-approval letter that goes along with the offer in terms of actually bidding on a house. So the seller doesn't dig into that level of detail because it's already been summarized and presented in a pre-approval letter from the lender. So as long as each buyer is pre-approved, it'll put them on the same playing field. What then comes into play is, what are the terms of the offer? What is the down payment amount? Sellers in this market always like to see a little bit more than 20% down, at least in the Los Angeles market, just in case any issues come up. For example, if a home doesn't quite appraise and the buyer is 20% down, the deal will fall apart. If a buyer is, say, 25% down and they have a little bit of wiggle room, if the house doesn't quite appraise, they can make up the difference in cash. So a seller is going to feel a lot more confident going with a buyer that has a larger down payment, assuming that both buyers are already pre-approved for a mortgage with a local, you know, well-respected mortgage banker. So the terms really do matter. And yes, often homes will get bid up even over the asking price, which leads to a related but distinct topic, and that's asking price versus what a house is worth. A lot of savvy sellers in today's market are actually pricing a house at or slightly below what it's worth, which in a market where buyers are outnumbering sellers significantly tends to cause a bit of a stampede when her house first comes on the market, and almost guarantees a bidding war, or also known as a multiple offer situation. And you will often see homes go solidly over the asking price, because asking and market value are two different things. So did that cover the question?
Yes, absolutely. And when you're talking about, you know, a house being more than even the asking price or something like that, or putting a larger down payment, I know that on the bridal show we were talking about the gift of wealth, that when people are getting married, what a great wedding gift that is from a family, instead of dishes and blenders or whatever, for people to pull their money together and to help somebody with a down payment on a home, because you're really giving them the gift of wealth and the gift of a future. Is that a good gift?
I think that's a fantastic idea. It's one that is going to pay dividends over and over, by helping a young couple out especially in high-value markets like Los Angeles, it's enormous because it's so difficult to compete in some of these high-value markets. Those down payment requirements are foreboding. You know, if you're talking even an entry-level home in Los Angeles, it's over $1 million, and you need a minimum of $200,000 to $250,000 in cash. That's an enormous amount of wealth for a young couple to have on hand. So anything families can do to help them out rather than giving them gifts that are going to depreciate, I'd say give them help with their down payments so that they can buy something that's going to appreciate over the long term and actually be an investment rather than a drag on their finances.
That's just such great advice. And then also, I know that when I was looking to buy a house, I had was advised to have a building inspector look at the house and to have an architect look at the house. And I found out that one of the homes that I was interested in buying, the wood had rotted and the house had dropped, and it was $800,000 just to raise the house because the property had
Oh, my goodness.
Is that important when somebody's looking to buy a home, too, that they bring in somebody independently, like a building inspector or an architect, to look over the property or the home?
Absolutely crucial. Having qualified inspectors look at a home, and any good real estate agent is going to recommend that. One of the key contingencies, at least in the California market, when a buyer purchases a home, is the offer being contingent upon the satisfactory inspection of the home. And in this market, we typically will do a general inspection where an independent third-party inspector hired by the buyer will look at the basic systems of the house, roof, plumbing, electrical, foundation. I'll automatically have a chimney inspector come out as well if the home has fireplaces, automatically have a sewer line expert come in and run a video camera down the sewer line to make sure that it's all in working order. Those are the three basic ones. And then the fourth one that we add often in Los Angeles, given that we are in an area where earthquakes are common, if the house is on a hillside, we pretty much always insist on a geologic inspection where a trained geologist will come out and look at all the records for that piece of land and determine what's underneath, whether it's bedrock, whether it's silt, and how stable it's going to be in a seismic event. So those four I recommend as a baseline. And then the general inspector will often point out if there's something that he sees that concerns him that's beyond his area of expertise, say he sees some sort of indication of mold. We would then call in a mold expert who could then comment on that. So those inspections are crucial, and they can often total between $1,000 and $2,000, but for an investment as large as is common here in Southern California, that's a nominal amount of money to know that you're buying something that is, in fact, what it appears to be.
It's amazing that we have to do that.
Absolutely. It's crucial.
It really is. You know, if you're looking, if you're on a fault line, or you're looking, like you're saying, about the chimneys, or, I mean, I was shocked that this house had sunk. And $800,000 to raise the house, and then the house had a lot of glass and bay windows, so when you raised the house, all the glass would have shattered and needed to be replaced, but yet when you looked at it, it just looked like this gorgeous home.
Right.
So you would never know that there were there, you know, those kind of problems. And so when somebody is looking that they've never bought before, at what point does somebody say, okay, I should stop renting and think about buying a home?
Well, I think it depends on a number of factors. You know, first and foremost, it's rent relative to the cost of ownership. So in a market like Los Angeles where rents are actually extraordinarily high and you have people renting apartments for $3,000, $4,000 a month, and then you look at the cost of carrying a $1 million home, and after the tax deduction, it comes out very similarly. It's very attractive to be pouring money into an asset in which you're building equity versus essentially burning $3,000 or $4,000 a month on rent. So it makes even more sense in higher value markets like this because the rents are so extraordinarily high. That's the long and short of it. And depending on one's individual tax situation, it can really make an enormous impact. If you're in a higher tax bracket, the home mortgage interest deduction combined with the property tax deductions, they're enormous, and they can have a dramatic impact on your annual tax bill.
Wow. so much information. It's so great. I so appreciate it.
Sure, sure.
Buying at home, if they have children or they're looking to have children, is it important as far as the, how do you find out the school district or Megan's Laws, or even if you don't have children, the crime rate in a particular area, or if the area is growing and going to put in freeways, or if it's going to change, or if the market's going to go up in value in a particular area? How do you find all those things out?
Well, some of them you can find out very, very literally, like school districts. You know, any agent in an area is going to know, in a given area, is going to know what the top school districts in that area are. And in Los Angeles, in the prime of Los Angeles, so basically from Los Feliz to the ocean, south of Mulholland, there are half a dozen school districts that really matter, and good agents are going to be aware of those. It is crucial because in a city like L.A., where private school tuitions can often run $25,000 to $30,000 plus a year per child, it's crucial that they often buy in a good school district. You can find those things out from city websites. You can go to the L.A. Unified School District's website and put in any address in the city, and it'll confirm the school districts. And then remind me the next part of your question. There were about two or three questions in there, I believe.
I was asking also about, you know, Megan's Law, and then also about crime rate in a particular area.
Sure. You know, you can also go to the local police department websites. I know the Los Angeles Police Department, if you go to their website, you can actually check crime statistics for specific zip codes and neighborhoods in the city. And most cities, at least larger cities, are going to have that capacity online. There's a wealth of information out there online that people can research, get from school districts to police and crime information. Most of it is out there. I think the third question that was in there was, how do you know if an area is growing and if it's going to hold its value over time? That is subjective, and I don't have a crystal ball, nor do any of us, but I think an agent who knows the neighborhoods in which they sell has a really good gut for the neighborhoods that are changing, that are evolving in good ways and bad ways. I will tell you, in most of prime Los Angeles, it's almost invariably evolving in a good way. Neighborhoods that 5-6 years ago people wouldn't have considered living in, now you go to and there are young families living there. Upwardly mobile young families moving into neighborhoods that before were a little edgy and a little, little dicey. There are a lot of neighborhoods that are evolving, and I think any good agent is going to know which neighborhoods are moving in a good direction and home values are appreciating in a solid pace.
And then when, you know, you're talking about, we're talking about first-time home buying, but what about buying homes for an investment?
We've seen a lot of that in the L.A. market. It's been driven by some larger entities. A number of hedge funds like Blackstone and a few others have bought quite literally thousands of homes in the San Fernando Valley and in several areas of Los Angeles. We've also seen a significant number of international investors buying homes often by the dozen, and actually buying, holding, and turning them into rental properties. In Los Angeles, we're in an odd moment here where there is arguably even more demand for rental properties than for properties to buy. And that's partly because the home values here are so high, and many high-income individuals and couples don't have the means to come up with these very large down payment requirements. You know, on a million-dollar home, you're looking at $200,000 to $250,000 in cash. That's an enormous amount of money to have on hand for a lot of people. And despite their incomes, they often have a challenge raising that money without help from family, which is why I mentioned earlier that it's an incredible gift, especially for a young couple, to help them out with down payments. Much more valuable than smaller things. So let's see. I lost my train of thought there.
We were just talking about investment properties. So.
Yeah, we see a lot of that in the San Fernando Valley and other areas of LA. And there is a lot of opportunity out there in this market, at least. It's rather difficult to compete unless you're all cash for investment purposes, largely because of the hedge funds and the international buyers who are coming in, and they're all cash. So it does get challenging at the more modest end of the LA market. Once you get in the mid and upper levels of the market, it is much more easy to compete with loans because it tends to be more local people buying duplexes, fourplexes, things like that are buying and holding for rental purposes, less so in the single-family arena. Single-family in great neighborhoods tends to be driven by owners who are going to live in those homes, less so for investment.
And how's the market different? I know that you work in the New York market as well, from the East Coast to the West Coast.
You know, my experience in the New York market, I moved to L.A. from New York 9 years ago. I do quite a bit of business in New York on a referral basis. I have a number of clients who are bi-coastal who have homes in both cities, and I have a handful of agents in the city in New York who I work with to service those clients on both coasts and provide a seamless level of service across all of their properties. The New York market is even more competitive than the Los Angeles market. It tends to be driven by even more cash than the LA market, and prices there have appreciated at a pace that has exceeded Los Angeles. And Los Angeles has appreciated significantly in the last 24 months, New York even more so. I believe that at this point, New York is already at or above the previous peaks. LA is approaching the previous peaks of 07. But we're not quite there, but we're not far off. New York has surpassed it already.
And what is OSEF for those that aren't familiar with that term?
Say that again, please.
What is OSEF for those that aren't familiar with that term, if you're saying it's surpassing?
Oh, 07. Oh, I'm sorry, 2007. That's what I was saying. 2007. Yeah, I was saying 07, 2007 peaks.
Okay. I mean, it's amazing just when you look at that, the highs and the lows and the changes and the quick and the vast changes that are happening now and the difference in the family structure now.
You know, absolutely. I'd love to say a little bit more on that change in the market. It's to reassure buyers that this is a very different time to buy than the previous run-up in the real estate market in 04, 5, 6, 7. That market at that time was driven largely by cheap money and, frankly, qualifications for loans that were less than realistic. They were giving money out to anyone with a pulse. And what's different, it's true. The banks, there were all kinds of shaky loans out there, stated income loans that people referred to as liar loans, where they would just trust that you made the amount of money that you said you did. There was no verification. That doesn't happen anymore. What drove the last run-up was cheap money that they'd give to anybody, basically. What drove the run-up this time is very different. It's cash. So the buyers who are buying today, they're either cash or super qualified. They're putting full down payments of at least 20%. You don't see people getting zero down loans anymore, at least not in the prime markets. So it's a much more stable appreciation than the one we saw the last time around, because it's based on solid financials, in my opinion.
And you see all these real estate courses, you know, buy homes, no money down, and flip them, turn them. Does that work?
Not in prime markets, no. You know, it might work in other areas. I can tell you on the coasts, that's not really viable, which I think is a good thing because it makes the market more solid and makes it more comfortable and appealing for buyers and first-time buyers to get into the market because they're buying into a market that's rooted in much more solid fundamentals and rooted in much more qualified buyers. So I think buyers can feel much more confident buying into today's market and know that they're paying a value that is sustainable, not one that's based on you know, artificially inflated demand based on cheap money and no money down. Those loans, I tend to err on the conservative side. Frankly, those types of loans make me very nervous.
And how does somebody find, you know, you, or if they're in a different state or they're in a different country, what is the best way to find somebody that you can really work with?
Well, given that buying a home is often the biggest financial decision someone will make, I think it's really great to talk to other people you know who own homes in your local area and find out who they worked with, find out if they liked working with them. You know, it's really important to have a trusted referral source. I can tell you my business is more than 75% repeat and referral. And that's because it is such a big decision and it's important to work with someone you trust. So I'd start with people you know in the area who own homes, ask who they worked with, talk to family, friends, people at work, and I would talk to more than one agent. I would talk to two or three and sit down, talk with them face-to-face, find out how they work with buyers, how they structure their relationship with the buyer, what the typical time it takes to find a home in that market is, and really go with someone with whom you have a good rapport, who your gut says is organized and straightforward and going to tell you what they really think. I think in any sales business, you tend to get a lot of people who tell people what they want to hear. I think it's much more valuable to the client and in the end, much more rewarding of a relationship with a client if you tell them the truth and just tell them the reality of the market and not promise them the world and deliver something less. But, you know, give them an honest lay of the land and tell them how to compete in that market and go from there. I think communication is key. So when you sit down with that agent in your local market, trust your gut and go for someone who you have a rapport with who really can communicate to you what's going on in your local market and how to approach your local market.
Advice. And now when you drive around and you see all these open houses and you can pop in and, you know, they give you wine and cheese or whatever, or you get to go through the house, is it important that you have your own agent and that you have someone that's working for you and with you specifically and helping you find a home? Or is it okay just to go around and if you see a house you like, just to deal with the agent of that house?
Well, I have a differing opinion on this than perhaps a lot of agents. Here in California, something called dual agency is perfectly legal, meaning one agent representing both the buyer and the seller. I believe it's much more valuable to the buyer to commit to an agent on an exclusive basis and work with that agent to represent them in finding a home, negotiating the deal, and carrying them through the escrow period. If you do work with the agent, the listing agent, it can work, but I think you have to be much more savvy and engaged in the process than if you have someone representing you, because essentially that agent is working for both sides. And it's to me, I don't quite understand how you go into a room and negotiate with yourself if you're representing both sides. I don't quite get it. Now, with that said, I have personally done dual agency, and it's been situations where I did have a listing and a buyer who I was already engaged with on a longer-term basis wanted to buy that property, and we'd have to be very upfront with both parties, have them agree to dual agency, and what I do in my brokerage is I pull in the manager of the office, and I have the buyer speak to them candidly. Because as a listing agent, I really can't suggest that the buyer pay anything but the agreed-upon listing price. And so I will have the buyer go to the manager of my office and discuss with them their offering strategy in terms and price and all of that so that they have someone who's independent who's giving them, you know, very direct advice without breaching a fiduciary responsibility to the seller. So It can be handled. It just needs to be handled properly and delicately. There are rare circumstances when it's a celebrity home that's being sold off market and dual agency there is more common, and that's for very different reasons. But I think for the majority of people, it's something that you want to be very careful about. So it can be handled, but again, it just needs to be done properly and carefully.
Really interesting. And then I know, reading your bio, that you were saying about communicating a consistent message from the listed property. Is that from the brochures? Is that important? And what does that look like?
You know, I spent 10 years in advertising in New York doing brand strategy prior to moving into real estate. And it's really classic branding. When you have a product, in this case a home, that you're going to market to a defined audience, it's really important that everything from the photography to the collateral materials to the sign on the house to the e-blasts to the website have a clean, consistent look and feel, and that they properly represent the house. And when that marketing set of marketing materials is clean and consistent across all media, it tends to draw people more easily, because there's not this hodgepodge of messages and materials and looks out there. It presents a really clean, sophisticated look, and I think that resonates with buyers, especially the photography. Homes are experiential products, and if you start with great photography, shot by professional photographers with lighting and all the goodies, you really do present the house in a light that's vastly more attractive. I mean, when people look at homes online, the ones with the great photographs stand out. Those are the ones that draw people in. And really, the purpose of marketing is, it's not to sell a house. It's simply to present it in an attractive enough light that potential buyers see it and want to actually get into it and experience it. That's what it's really all about, is just driving traffic to the home so that people can experience the space.
And then, do you recommend virtual tours?
I'm not a huge fan of them. I do use them sometimes, but I prefer still photography. And not a lot of it either. I like 8 to 10 photos of the home. Again, it's about generating enough interest that someone wants to come see the house. I sometimes see listings where they've photographed every doorknob and faucet in the house, and I don't think that's particularly effective, because if you go to that level of detail, you may actually focus on an insignificant element that a buyer may not find attractive, and as a result of all those ugly doorknobs and faucets, they decide not to see the house, when that's such an insignificant reason not to go see a house. I think it's about presenting the bigger picture, the standout features of the house, in an attractive way so that people want to come in and get the overall feel for it, and not miss the forest for the trees, and focus on little tiny details that aren't very expensive to change, and really focus on the space, the location, the light, the flow, the unchangeables of the house. The things that need to be fundamentally right. So I think it's limited, well done photography. Personally, not a fan of virtual tours, though they can work. But again, this is my own bias.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking you. I love this, and I mean, and now I'm never going to look at a doorknob without thinking of you and laughing, because I love it. People that photograph their doorknobs. And then, what about staging? Are you a fan of staging?
Absolutely. If a property is vacant, in particular if a property is vacant, it's crucial to stage. Here's why. People might think that a space looks bigger when it's empty. The opposite is true. A space looks smaller when it's empty. That's because there's nothing in the room that people can relate to and gauge the space. When there's a sofa in there, people can gauge the space. When it's just empty, they can't really visualize what will fit in that room. So spaces will look smaller. Also, most people don't walk into an empty space and have the ability to just envision it furnished and with drapes and sofas and tables and chairs. And they can't really envision it as a home. It just feels like a cold, empty space. And what I find is that staging, though it is expensive, it often returns 3 to 4 times the cost of it in terms of the ultimate selling price. Because it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, homes are experiential. When someone walks through, they need to feel like it's a place they'd want to live. And being staged and furnished enables that. Also, you really can have very good photography of empty rooms, whereas stage rooms can be beautifully shot and lit and done right. So the marketing is better. The experience of the potential buyer walking through the house is vastly better. And as I said, I see typically a 3-4 time return on the cost of the staging in terms of the net selling price at the end.
That's huge. I mean, that's a huge difference.
It is. People, you know, they see this $5,000 staging bill perhaps, and they think, oh, that's an enormous amount to spend. And I can virtually guarantee they're going to get $20,000 or $25,000 more for the house by spending that money.
Now, as a realtor, do you stage it, or do you recommend a stager? Are there stagers you work with, or do you just suggest people rent furniture, or what's the way to go?
You know, I think staging needs to be done right or not at all. I don't think just putting a few pieces of furniture in does it, because it doesn't make a place feel like a home. It doesn't make it feel warm and inviting. I don't stage myself. I work only with professional stagers, and they literally have warehouses full of furniture, and they can select the pieces that are appropriate for the architecture. You know, the style of furniture and staging you're going to want in a mid-century modern house is wildly different from that you're going to want in a 1920s Spanish. So a good stager really is a great interior designer too. And they come in and they stage the house out of often an enormous amount of stock that they keep on hand in a way that's appropriate. And the stagers I work with, they go right down to their fresh cut flowers replaced every week in the house. I mean, it feels like you're walking into a house that's ready for an Architectural Digest shoot. And that's what you get great photography out of, and that's what you get a great buyer or prospective buyer experience out of. To me, it's do it right or don't, because I don't think you'll see the same kind of return on very modest staging that you will on the more extravagant staging. You'll see a better return on it, for sure.
And then what about people that are living in their homes while they're selling them?
You know, stagers will often do a modified version of what I just explained. They'll come in and essentially do a consultation with the seller, walk through each room of the home, and suggest how the space might be minimized in terms of furnishings and tchotchkes and personal things. You want to make the space almost feel as minimal as possible. They'll suggest that you clear out as much clutter, as much tabletop items as you can, and then they'll come in and do a little bit of fluffing. Where they'll bring in pillows, smaller pieces of furniture, a few smaller items, just to make it feel really polished. And unfortunately, and this is a challenge for sellers, is living in a home that's on the market, and anyone who sold a home knows this, it's a bit like living in a glass box, because every time you leave the house for work, you need to leave it looking flawless. So it's a little bit exhausting. And again, anyone who sold knows that, but that's really in the seller's interest, because the better the house looks when it's shown, ultimately the better the net selling price.
You know, I sold a property. I had a condominium that was for sale, and Stager Invasion, the television show, contacted me. It was they could stage my condo, and I had 3-4-story ceilings. And when I first moved in, I mean, it was crazy, because the people that were living there before I bought the place had a 14-foot Christmas tree. And I remember calling my mom and saying, you know, I got a Christmas tree when I moved in. And she said, how big is the tree? I said, have you been to the bank lately? Because when you have a 4-story ceiling, and everybody that would come into my home would say all these different things. You should have a movie theater. You should have kites. You should have parachutes. Everybody had a different idea. But what do you do with 4-story ceilings? And Stager Invasion came in, and they said, this is what you want to do, you know, that you have this incredible space. And they also had told me that if you have, I had incredible artwork, and they said, you don't want like a Picasso in the living room, or you don't want a famous piece of art, because somebody's going to come in and they're going to remember the art and not the living room. Or they're going to remember pictures of you with the celebrities in the hallway, and they're not going to remember the hallway. They're just, and taking your personality out and putting it in a way that people can see themselves living there, that was huge for me.
That's crucial, yeah. It's exactly what you said. It's enabling people to feel that they can make that space their home, not to critique how you made it your home. So it is creating that blank canvas for them that feels warm, that feels inviting, but and really capitalizes on the fundamentals of the space, as you mentioned. And helping them envision living there themselves. That's really what it comes down to. And that's why good staging will end up netting you a higher sales price, because it's done just that. It's elevated the space to make its best features shine, minimized its negative features, and made it a clean enough palette that a buyer can envision living there themselves.
It just sounds like such an incredible process to be able to help people through this and to be able to help them find their home and what they're looking for and how to live their life. And then what happens if, and I know in talking to the reverse mortgage broker, we were talking about as people are nearing, you know, into their later years, and what happens, though, when a house, when somebody passes and the children now have a house or the house has been willed, do you recommend that they hang on to it or that they work with the realtor and see what the value is and what their options are, or what's the very best thing to do when you're willed a house?
Well, in that situation, I mean, it's delicate and it's very emotional, and sometimes some families will need a little bit of time before they part with an asset, especially if it's a place where they grew up and their parents lived there their whole lives. But I think it's important to engage a local agent who can help you evaluate your options. Unless someone is going to actually live in the house, it's generally to take whatever time you need to say your goodbyes and work through all of the possessions that I'm sure are in the house, but then work with an agent to help you figure out what it's worth, how to best market it. Many times it'll involve taking all of the existing possessions out and restaging it so that it feels fresh and new, especially if someone's lived there a long time. It can feel heavy to a prospective buyer in terms of all the history that's there and all the personal effects that are there. So definitely engage a realtor. Almost always minimize what's in there and engage a stager as well. But it's a delicate process, and it really depends on where that family is in there in saying their goodbyes, whether or not they're quite ready to part with the home.
I just love that you have so much information. How does somebody find you to work with you? Do you have a website? Do they call you directly?
Sure.
Or email you? Best way?
Sure, yeah. They can go to my company's website. It's called Telus Properties, T-E-L-E-S. Telus Properties in Beverly Hills is my office. We have about 11 offices across Southern California. But you can find my profile on the page there and drop me a note or give me a call. Absolutely happy to talk to anyone and go from there.
That's fantastic. You have so much to share. And I know that we were talking briefly. You used the expression macro and micro loans. Can you explain what that is?
Oh, I think I was saying macro and micro markets. And, you know, micro market is a term that we started using at my firm back in 2007, because what we started to notice is that markets can behave radically different. Real estate markets can behave radically differently from one to the next. For example, within just the LA market, what's going on in the micro market of Bel Air can be very different from what's going on in the micro market of Hancock Park. The supply and demand dynamics can vary tremendously. So even though the macro real estate market in California may look great, there can be individual micro markets where they're underperforming or overperforming. It really does matter from locality to locality. You know, someone who lives in Bel Air is probably completely unaware of what's going on 5 miles away in Encino. And even though those places are just 5 miles apart, the markets can be behaving radically differently. So we actually break up LA, prime Los Angeles, into 31 distinct micro markets that we follow on a monthly basis and look at supply, demand, sales, days on market, average selling price. And again, it can vary surprisingly significantly from one market to another, even in a 4 or 5 mile radius.
You know, I find that with health insurance and car insurance. I know that my car insurance has changed drastically, and I moved just 1 mile away from my old place, and my health insurance jumped like crazy.
Yeah, they base it on your zip code and what's normal and customary in those markets. To your earlier point about crime rates, the crime rates in your local neighborhood, when I moved from a few years ago from Beverly Hills into the Hollywood area, my insurance actually, my car insurance went up significantly because apparently, even though it's unbeknownst to me, there's more crime where I live now. And I had no idea. I never would have guessed it, but apparently there was more auto crime here. You'll often see changes of significance in homeowners insurance, auto insurance, health insurance, all those things.
That's just crazy. It's amazing. I mean, things we don't even think about. So
it's true. Yeah.
And so when somebody is getting ready to buy a home, is it the very best thing to find someone first, find the area first, figure out what they could afford first, get their finances in order before they come to you? What's step one, step two, step three for people that this is brand new?
I think step one is to work through your personal contacts, friends, family, neighbors in the area of interest and get one or two or even three referrals to agents who someone you know has used and had a great experience with and interview them. Talk to those two or three agents and I would sit down with them face to face and then I would first start there. And once you've narrowed down to an agent, I would ask that agent for two or three referrals to mortgage bankers in the local area. It's really important to put together a good team that can help you through the entire home buying process. So starting with the real estate agent, then to a mortgage broker, getting pre-approved, getting your finances in order, checking both of your credit ratings, getting your down payment funds liquid, doing that preparation, and then circling back around with the agent and beginning the search. The search tends to operate a bit like a funnel. People start broad, and then it quickly narrows down the funnel when they realize what their real priorities are and their must-haves are versus the nice-to-haves. And then when it comes down to finding a specific home to write an offer on, it's about having that team in place, the real estate agent and the banker who can work in concert to position you, the buyer, as best as possible, have a very clean, organized offer package so that you're going to shine relative to other buyers who may be making an offer on that property that you're interested in. So it's about putting a team together, doing your homework, spending the month doing the preparation, and then diving into the market and having someone good to guide you through that whole process.
It's wonderful to have you here today and to have this
information.
Thank you. I think it's such a perfect time to be talking about this. And 2014 itself is such, we've had a numerologist on, Julian Michael, and he was saying that this, what an incredible year this is going to be. And I know it's a Chinese New Year, and we've had all of these shifts and changes. And I can't imagine a better way to start the year.
I think it's going to be a fantastic year. Yeah, I really do. I feel great about where the real estate market sits right now locally here. I know many of my colleagues do. The year has started off incredibly strong. This January was one of the busiest Januaries in terms of transaction volume that we've had here in LA in years. So it's already started off in a great way. And I'm totally in agreement with your other guests that the year looks very bright.
I just absolutely love that. And then I have a couple more questions for you. I know
Sure. Your
time is wrapping up, but I wanted to ask you about renovations, buying a home to renovate. And what are you looking for? Because I know that you have such a background in the architecture and the rich history of buildings. So when somebody is looking to do that, to buy a home as an investment or looking to renovate an old home and to move into it, are there things that they should be looking for first or questions they should be asking?
Well, I think it starts fundamentally with buying a home that has good bones and it's already got the proportion, the layout, the space, the land, the basics, the unchangeables are in good stead. And then depending on one's bandwidth, if it's truly a gut renovation and you will be reconfiguring rooms, that's a huge undertaking. I think for most people, it's about finding, as I said, good bones, good space, good layout, and then doing more of a cosmetic renovation, flooring, kitchens, baths, taking that route. I would advise people not to underestimate the amount of their own time it will take to do renovations. It's tremendous amounts of involvement, even when you hire someone else to take care of it. You'll be very involved, and the process takes time. So I wouldn't encourage someone who's a first-time buyer to buy a fixer that needs everything. I would say find something that's more, it's move-in, and they could live in it as is. Maybe it's not ideal, and then change things over time and take on the projects in smaller bites. For someone who's already owned multiple homes, they're probably more prepared to dive in and do a truly gut renovation in which you can't even live in the house at the time, and you're doing a huge reconstruction project. That's definitely not for the faint of heart. I would say start smaller if you're newer to the home buying process. Buy something that needs a new bathroom or a new kitchen and start there.
That's great advice, especially because people see that. They say, oh, there's this old Victorian home, and that would be lovely to move into, and they've never bought a home before, and then all of a sudden they have all this expenses and time, and they're not comfortably living for quite some time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you can be opening Pandora's box in an older home, especially because you find out the plumbing's not copper, you find out the wiring's cloth wiring from 1935, you find out all kinds of hidden things that you can't even see. Whereas at least with a home that's relatively newer, the basic systems are likely to be in better shape and there's more cosmetic work and less mechanical and structural work. It's when you start opening up walls and get into mechanical and structural that things get really expensive.
For those of you that are listening, I think this is incredible advice. And then I also wanted to ask you, when you were saying that people should have their banking in order and their financing in order, but then you also said that people buy homes from international, people from other countries will buy homes here just as properties. Do you need an American bank account, and do you need to be an American citizen to be buying here?
You don't need to be an American citizen as an international buyer. However, it's helpful if you have significant funds in a U.S. bank and your down payment requirements will often be a little bit higher. Most foreign buyers are either paying cash or they're working with an international with whom they have a relationship, often in their home country. Say a Swiss that has been buying in the U.S. will often be working with Credit Suisse or one of the major Swiss banks to help them purchase that property because they already have an existing relationship in their home country. And regardless of whether someone's international or domestic, I think one of the best places to start is always a bank with whom you have a relationship because they know you and they're often willing to do things that a bank who's new to you may not be willing to do. So there are definitely financing options for international buyers as well, but they tend to be a little bit narrower than for someone who is either a green card holder or an American citizen. If they have a green card, they're effectively treated as an American citizen with regard to mortgage banking.
Since we have an international audience, and I do know that you said that at the top of the show, I just wanted to make sure that we touch base on that.
Sure.
And then I wanted to ask you, because I'm very much, as you heard in the beginning of the show, into the nonprofits and into all the charities. And I don't know if you know, I was recently knighted for my humanitarian work. And so I work with charities all over the world. And I'm so interested in the Institute of Classical Architecture and Classical America that you're working with. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, it's a wonderful organization. Full disclosure here, my profile that you took that off of is a couple
yes.
years out of date.
Yes.
And I'm no longer actively involved with the organization, although I think incredibly highly of it. I just had other priorities that took my time. But it's a wonderful organization of architects and interior designers who are there to support each other in architecture, design, and all the applied arts, and to teach, to expose others to great architecture and design, to provide classes and education for people who are interested in the arenas or already work in the arenas. It's a wonderful organization, one that I was involved with in the past, but haven't been recently, unfortunately. But it's a great organization. It's really all about sharing the architects and designers who are part of the organization, sharing their passions and their interests and their knowledge with other people who are in that arena or interested in it. So it's a really wonderful organization.
Oh, it sounds amazing. And as you're saying, as you're updating your websites and you're updating your bios, is there something exciting you can share with me about what you're doing now? And I love the fact that you have such an incredible history with architecture and your passion for the buildings and the styles of buildings. I was talking just recently to somebody, and they were talking about how we didn't have Legos, really, when we were kids. As boys, you probably had Lincoln Logs or something like that to play with. And does that inspire you, and are there things now that inspire you in the field of architecture and in the real estate market?
I guess I'll take that second, the last question there. There's a lot that inspires me. I know that in the last, say, 10 years, there's been a resurgence of interest in design and architecture amongst a huge swath of the American population. And I'm always excited by and impressed by how many people take an interest in it to understand architecture, to experience it, and then also taking it down to far beyond architecture. Look at how important design has become right down to home product levels. Target has engaged incredible designers, Michael Graves and others like him, to design everything from toasters to flatware. There's been this tremendously vibrant resurgence in interest in design, and I think it goes from architecture all the way down to the things that you furnish your home with. And it's that actually excites me. I love that people appreciate it. And one of my favorite things actually is when I sell a home to a client and that home did have an architect involved and it was a thoughtful home, I'm always really in awe of when they call me a year or 2 years later and tell me they'll never again live in a home that didn't have an architect involved because of all the little thoughtful details that they didn't even notice when they were buying it, but they realized once they lived there. Things like all the light switches are exactly where you want them to be. You know, the lines of sight out of the windows are really attractive and focused on something I want to see. You know, every detail of the house has been thought of. So I love when I see clients really appreciate the thought and the effort and the time that went into designing a home or designing a product. It's that really excites me. I love to see that.
You'd just be such an amazing realtor to work with. I could tell the passion in your voice, not just for the
business, thank you.
But the homes and for the care of people and to making sure that people follow through properly and have that experience years after they've worked with you and send people to you because of the incredible experience that they've had. And it just seems like, you know, such a brilliant way to go instead of it being just a business transaction, but it being a life transaction. And it sounds like that's what you do with people.
It very much so. And it's incredibly rewarding. I feel so fortunate to do something that I truly, truly enjoy. It doesn't feel like work anymore. It's something that I gain a lot of pleasure from. And I tell people all the time, buyers or sellers, that buying or selling a home is perhaps 75% emotional and maybe 25% financial. Everyone thinks it's the opposite. But in reality, it's a highly emotional, very personal process, and it's very rewarding to guide people through that, and in the end, see them happy in a home. It's great to see.
And what does this, we always ask for definitions on this show, and what does home mean to you?
Home, to me, centers around people, and that my home is a place that enables me to entertain and have my friends and my family over and to make them comfortable, a place that is welcoming to them. To me, you know, living in Southern California, having a home that has great indoor space, outdoor space, and just lends itself to having company, having social events, having family over for Thanksgiving, you know, that's what makes a home to me. It's the people who I can enjoy it with. And that the space was thoughtful enough in terms of how it was created and designed that it can make all those people feel at home just as I do. So that's to me, that's what home is. It's really about people.
That's a great definition.
Thanks.
Really,
that was off the top of my head.
That was fabulous. It sounds like, I mean, that was fabulous. There's your brochure, John.
Yeah, I know. As I mentioned, I'm updating my website and my marketing materials, and maybe I need to be a bit more off the cuff in them.
That was brilliant. I thought that was just fantastic. Thank you for that. And so tell us once more how to reach you, because I know the people listening to the show are absolutely going to want to reach out and find you.
Sure. The easiest way to find me is on my company's website. It's Telles Properties, T-E-L-E-S, Properties. I'm in the Beverly Hills office here in California, and my name is John Iglar, I-G-L-A-R. And you could just look up my name under the agent section on the company website and drop me a note or give me a call.
That's so great. Well, we so appreciate your being with us today and your time and your expertise and your skill and your talent and your history. And
thank you.
All of your wisdom. And I think it's such a wonderful, important time. And it's so important still to have the proper information that you're saying be buttoned up, but to have that arsenal of, if I am buying a house for the very first time, where do I begin? Where do I even start?
Right.
And if I am looking for an investment property, where do I go for that? And how do you find the proper neighborhood and what to look for and what are the pitfalls? And like you're saying, if you are going to renovate a house, that's a huge undertaking, and if this is your first time buying a house, you think it's all romantic and exciting to buy, you know, a house, and then you have no idea that they have to take out the pipes or the copper or the whatever you're saying and the water. You're not going to have water for a while, or you're not going to have, you know, whatever that is, or the drain spouts, or when it rains, all of a sudden your backyard's going to flood, and to have that information, to have an inspector looking at the place, to have your credit scores in order, to be able to know that people can help you as far as a down payment that you might need up to 25% down, which is a huge chunk. And
even if
you're not living in a Los Angeles area, if you're living in Broken Bow, Oklahoma or something, or, you know, you're in the middle of America, you still are going to need a huge down payment right now. You know, the homes might not be selling for as much as the property in New York or in Los Angeles, but certainly you still have to have the same steps of
absolutely
being able to be qualified and being able to know to look for an inspector, how to find a realtor, that you don't want to just wander into a house and wander into whatever it is that they're selling and you have no knowledge of what it is you need on your end or anybody working for you or with you or how to go about doing that. And so I think all of this is just such incredibly important information for people no matter what level, whether they're looking to buy internationally, whether they're looking to have multiple homes, whether they're looking to sell or looking to buy. And I could just tell that you're incredible to work with, and would be so
thank you
to work with. I mean, you have so much information, and the way you share it is so clear and so concise and so true. It rings into this is absolutely what needs to be done next. And so,
well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's very, very, very sweet of you.
No, and I so appreciate you and your time. So thank you for being with us today. It's such a joy and such a pleasure. And we will definitely be calling you, and I look forward to hearing from everybody who is out there buying houses and contacting John. And let me know. Invite me over. And I would love to see the fulfillment of people's visions and dreams. So thank you again for being with us today.
All right. Thank you, Nicole.
All right. Thank you, John. Wow, what a special guest. I love that. I absolutely love that. So for those of you who knew me, at the time when I was selling my condominium, I was contacted by Stager Invasion, the TV show, and Stager Invasion came and they actually staged my home to sell it at a higher price. And it was incredible what they did, because they came in and they said, you know, I had frescoes in the living room, incredible artwork, and I said, people will come in, they will remember the artwork, they will not remember the living room. I had over 3-story ceilings, which just made it look like this huge space, so they had to fill that space, and I had pictures of myself with celebrities, whatever, through the years of my career. They said, people are going to look at these pictures of you with the celebrities, of the awards, or whatever that is. They're not going to remember the hallway or the room or the office or wherever that is. And then my bedroom was very, very pink at that time, very girly. And they said, unless Barbie is moving into this house, truly, it was so funny that they made it a monochromatic color. And then they also had talked about that I had books in every room. I did not know. They said, you have books in every room. And I said, no, I don't. And they said, let's take a walk, shall we? And there are things that you don't even know about yourself, but that I did not have a room for me. Books are very natural because I read as much as I read, and I share the information with all of you. But for somebody else to have books in every room, so I thought that that was really interesting. I didn't even know that about myself. But when they came in and they staged my home, immediately it sold on a dime right away. And so what John was talking about, being able to stage a house by a professional stager, being able to have photographs, really clear pictures, not a lot of pictures. What was he saying? You don't want to photograph the doorknob, but pictures that are really going to show the house in the best light and make people want to come, invite people into that home, and then the rest will unfold in front of them. And so all of that is just such great information. I did not know that you needed 25% now, over 25% down. And so if you are listening and you are part of our bridal show or you are getting married at this point, you might want ask your family and friends, instead of a blender and dishes and sheets and pillows, whatever, that people help you with that investment and put money down in your home. That Jamie Brown, who we had on, that clears your credit, who is just incredible for Brown's Consulting, and that you reach out to someone like Jamie, who can even get you an 800 credit score. She can teach you how to do that or do that for you, get your credit score in order, get your banking in order, so you go in and you can have the very best presentation and being able to buy a house, how to find the proper neighborhoods, how to, all of that. It's just, it's incredible information, and John is so clear. You could tell he'd be remarkable to work with as an agent. He has such knowledge, first of architecture, building, history, the city, the areas, but he also knows everything from financing to what it takes, whether you're selling a home or buying a home. So I just really kudos to John, and anybody with a question should reach out to him. And I love that he works on both coasts. And if you're from another country or if you're from another state, please feel free to email us or to email John, and we will find someone in your area for you to work with, because we want to make sure that you have the best information available. And while we are talking today about Hollywood and home buying, I wanted to talk about the Hollywood Beautification. And the Hollywood Beautification Team is an organization that I've been part of for many years now, and if you know me or you've been following me or you're a friend of mine or a fan of mine or in my world, or if you're new to my world, welcome to my world. And you can learn about the Hollywood Beautification, which is an amazing organization that is now expanded to the Los Angeles Beautification. And the Hollywood Beautification was really started by one woman, Sharon Romano, which we will bring on the show, who is incredible, who had a vision and a dream of cleaning up Hollywood. And everything that you see, from the graffiti being taken off buildings, for trees being planted in poor neighborhoods, for schools that no longer have asphalt, for playgrounds that were dangerous before, everything in the beautification of the city, our parks, our communities coming together. And I came to work with the Hollywood Beautification several years ago, and I came in to help them with one single event, fell in love drastically, radically with this organization. I thought, oh my goodness, these people are doing so much good for this city, and so many celebrities have helped along the way, whether it's Amy Smart, Pierce Brosnan, Ed Asner, Ed Bagby Jr., Melissa Gilbert, Paula Poundstone, Frances Fisher, so many people have been part of this organization and helping this organization, and it truly does such remarkable work. And so every year they have a gala, and I've always been part of helping this gala along and promoting the gala and making people aware that you can come to this event, you can meet the local people in your communities, you can see the difference in the organizations that are really, really, really crossing lines. That we talk about an unlimited life. How do you have unlimited communities? How do you have a Hollywood, a city? I mean, now it's Los Angeles Beautification. It's no longer Hollywood Beautification because they spread out to so many surrounding areas that they've made safe and beautiful, and helping children with programs, environmental, food programs, safe passage programs, everything across the board. And last year, the Los Angeles Beautification team was gifted a building. And they are the very first organization to be gifted a building. And when the mayor got up to speak, he said that when you are looking to give money and you're looking at what organization does the most good, that undoubtedly the Los Angeles Beautification team does the most good. And so a building was granted, and this building now is available to teach environmental programs. We were talking to Jeffrey Collins, the green architect, and Jeffrey is going to be teaching programs there. It's an amazing, amazing organization. So the next event is May 28th. That is May 28th. And that is in Los Angeles, California. So you can either fly in, or if you were here, go to that. It's going to be at Baso, which is in Hollywood, California. Paula Poundstone is the host. Come meet our mayor, our city officials, many celebrities that will be joining us. And it is such a good cause. So you're welcome to go to Hollywood Beautification Team online, or Los Angeles Beautification Team, or you can always email me at Nicole@NicoleBrandonWorldwide.com. That's Nicole@NicoleBrandonWorldwide.com, and I'm happy to give you the information for the gala and the event. So that is May 28th for the Los Angeles Beautification Team Gala, which is part of the Hollywood Beautification Team, has now expanded. And if you yourself have an environmental cause, if you are greening the city, if you are planting vegetables, if you are doing anything with the organic, with growing, with biosphills, with catching rainwater, with being able to help children, with the tree plantings, with anything that is going to beautify the city or beautify a spirit or soul or a child or a life or bring communities together, please reach out to us. The building is available to do incredible events, to teach classes, and the work that comes out of there is just amazing. And when you drive through Hollywood and you drive through Los Angeles now, it is so safe and it is so beautiful and it feels so like old Hollywood. There's just a magic, and the Los Angeles Beautification Team is really part of that, and they've created that energy, that essence. And I also love the tree plantings. I love going and planting trees in poor neighborhoods and on streets that have cement, and all you have to do is call. They will show up with the trees. Everybody circles the tree, and they name the tree, and they get the children involved, and it's just spectacular to do that. And they will also give you trees. If you want a tree for your house, if you call the Los Angeles Beautification Team and you tell them what direction you face, and you tell them if you want a child to be swinging on the tree, if you want it for shade, what is the point and purpose of your tree, and you just have to promise to take care of that tree, to love that tree, and they will come and they will bring you a tree. So it's an amazing, amazing, amazing organization. I wanted to make you all aware of it, and I thought today's a perfect day as we're talking about Hollywood and the housing of Hollywood, and we're talking about the real estate in Hollywood. And if you missed Charles Gwynn's show when he was talking about reverse mortgages, I thought that was such a spectacular show. And one of the things that he said that really drove me and really woke me up and really made me think is that when he was saying, if you own your home, and that's what we're talking about today, if you own your home and you've taken all these years and all this money and you've put it into your home and your home has been your investment, that is actually your savings account. That if you had rented a home and taken the same amount of money and put it in a savings account, at, you know, as you get to your retirement, you would think nothing of taking money out of your savings account for your home health care or for a trip around the world or to send your grandchildren to college, whatever that is. You would think nothing. That money is your savings. It is yours. Well, the money that is invested in your home is also yours. It is your savings account. And with the reverse mortgage, you can take money out of your home. You can and still own your home and still be able to have home health care, travel the world, give it to your family, do whatever it is that you want to do to enjoy your life and live an unlimited life. And so when you own a home, you have so many infinite possibilities. So if you've missed that show, just go to Charles Gwynn, Unlimited Life, and it's you can hear it at any time. It was really such amazing, fantastic information and perfect as a subject for today as we're talking about home buying and the home buying market. And very exciting news, all of our shows now are going to be part of podcasts, so you will get to hear them as podcasts, and you will also be able to download all of our shows into your phone. And so the next few weeks, we have some very exciting news coming out for you as we launch our website. In 2014, we have so much coming to you, so much incredible information in new science, new technology, new medicine, alternative ways to live, international travel, incredible new vehicles, everything from UFOs to new science, and certainly we have relationships and how we're dealing with the communities, our lives, ourselves, and some of the most incredible teachers, world leaders, and innovators that you could possibly imagine that are lined up for you in the upcoming weeks. So it's a very, very, very exciting time. Next week, we're very excited as we have the Awoods coming up talking about the Passion Test. And the Passion Test, we've talked about on Hermia Nelson's show, and we were talking about what is the Passion Test. The Passion Test is a book, and it is also a consciousness, a secret, a tool, and a technique to be able to lead the life that you love. It's a way to actually figure out what your top five or your top 10 passions are. And I can tell you, I had no idea. I thought for sure I knew what my passions were. And then I took the passion test, and what came up for me was not at all what I thought it was, but it's truly what was the calling of my heart. And what they teach you to do is every day, if you say, is this moving me closer to my passion or away from my passion? If it's not moving you closer to your passion, then it's something that you don't do. And they teach you how to choose only doing the things that are moving you closer to your passions. And it's incredible how your life shifts so quickly and how all of a sudden you're living your visions, your dreams, your fantasies, the life you always wanted to live in, your abundance, your wealth, just opens and floods, and your life, your romance, your relationships, how everything changes and opens and becomes incredibly aligned with the passion test. And so I'm so thrilled, because when I took this course and I took a passion test class, and you can certainly buy the book, you can certainly do it online, but I went and I took a course, and I have never had such a life-shifting, life-changing event as in taking the passion test. I recommend it for everyone, and I am so exhilarated that they're going to be going, you know, coming on the show and talking about the passion test. And then, of course, we're talking about deeper love, and then we have Doug Walsh coming up, and Doug Walsh is Get My Talk. And Get My Talk, that is how you are all now going to be able to have all of these episodes downloaded right into your phone, that you'll just be able to hit Nicole, and all of these episodes, you can hear any of the past episodes, future episodes, this episode we're listening to right now. And so if your business can use all of a sudden instant downloads, where all of a sudden the information you are sharing from the stage, the information if you're at a medical conference that you're teaching somebody, if you're on the phone and you're going through a business proposal, if all of a sudden everything that you just said in that business proposal can be downloaded right into that client's phone instantaneously, whatever information they need, imagine how that could grow your business. So Doug is coming on with Get My Talk. Incredible, incredible, incredible information, new technology, so interesting, and just what a way to launch your business and your finance in 2014. So we have so many exciting shows coming up for you, and I'm so thrilled. It's just such an incredible start to the new year. And so I wanted to thank today's guest, John Iglar, just incredible, from Telus Properties. He's remarkable. And everything that he said, all of his vast experience over the years in home buying, whether you're a first-time home buyer, whether you're buying as an investment, whether you're buying again, whether you're buying to rent, that truly, or if you're looking to renovate and to really create a dream, find him. He's so generous with his time and his wisdom. And truly, you can tell he would just be such a special, special, special person to work with. So I thank him so much for being there. And if you're in the Los Angeles area or you want to fly in for the event, May 28th is the Los Angeles Beautification Team Gala, hosted by Paula Poundstone. Should be a fun, hysterical evening, as well as supporting an incredible cause. So we've got so many wonderful shows lined up for you. I so look forward to the Passion Test, to Deeper Love, to Doug Walsh and Get My Talk, and all of the new technology, new information, and wonderful information we have coming your way. So this is Nicole Brandon from Unlimited Life wishing you a wonderful week, and we will see you next week. Thank you again to John Iglar, Real Estate Today.